Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast on Beyond Virtualization, the Monte Vista Approach to Multi-Core SoC Resource Allocation and Control. I'm Chris Schufo, Group Editorial Director at Open Systems Media. Of pertinence to today's eCast are our magazines Embedded Computing Design, Compact PCI and Advanced PCA Systems, PC 104 and Small Form Factors, as well as Military Embedded Systems Magazine. It is a widely held misconception that in order to fully extract the performance available from today's multi-core processors, one must utilize a combination of Linux and either an RTOS or simple runtime environment. Conventional wisdom also holds that Linux is too big and or too slow, yet it's typically RTOS vendors who perpetuate this myth. Monte Vista provides a Linux-based programming environment that can scale from high-performance bare metal to an RTOS-like multi-threaded runtime all the way up to a fully virtualized Linux SMP process model. The company argues that application developers can now deploy a single Linux operating system across all of the cores on a multi-core processor and avoid the complexity of multiple runtimes. There's no need for an RTOS and a hypervisor plus Linux when Linux will do just fine. Today's eCast describes an approach to deliver a highly configurable, scalable, and virtualized Linux environment that includes a very low overhead runtime capability that matches bare machine and or RTOS performance, which will lower overall development cost. Before we begin with our high-profile speakers today, I'd like to go over a couple of housekeeping items. Today's total briefing will consume about 50 minutes, leaving us 10 minutes or so for questions at the end. Actually, I hope more questions. On the audience console window before you, I encourage you to note a couple of buttons, the Enlarge Slides button and the Forward to a Friend button. With the latter, you can send an email to someone inviting them to participate live in this very eCast. Go on, break up their coffee break. Get them involved. As well, you'll also need to have all pop-up blockers disabled or at least allow pop-ups from ON24. You'll also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. This is often the most interesting part of the eCast. We'll do our best to address all questions during the closing Q&A session. And if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you privately during the eCast. And note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. And we hope to have this eCast posted online within 24 hours, typically much faster. More details at the end. Our first speaker today is a man who needs no introduction, but we'll oblige him anyway. He is Jim Reddy, Chief Technology Officer at Monte Vista, called, quote, arguably the one individual most responsible for establishing the embedded OS and tools market by LinuxDevices.com and, quote, an iconic figure within the IT industry by SD Times, Jim is a recognized authority in the embedded systems and real-time software industry. The co-founder of Reddy Systems, he developed the world's first commercially viable real-time operating system product, the VRTX real-time kernel, and we all know about that one. Already an industry legend, Jim invented the category of embedded Linux commercialization in 1999 when he founded Monte Vista Software to provide the Linux operating system to the embedded systems market and to offer embedded system expertise to the open source Linux community. And I remember what a groundswell it was at the time. Jim got his BA from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in 1971 and his MA from the University of California, Berkeley in 1976. Our second speaker today is Patrick McCarty, Director of Product Management at Monte Vista Software. He's in charge of hardware enablement, pricing, and channel strategies. Patrick has been working in high tech for more than 10 years, seven of those with Intel and the last four with Monte Vista Software. He's also responsible for managing the Monte Vista Linux 6 and Carrier Grade Edition products. So back to Jim, who's going to kick us off today. Mr. Reddy, are you, well, ready?
Gee, I've never heard that joke before. In fact, I am. It's a pleasure to be here with everyone. Good morning and good afternoon, depending on where people are coming from. So we would like to share our thoughts on the buzzword of the last couple of years, virtualization, and what it means for us folks building embedded systems. And especially as it pertains to SoCs, you know, systems on a chip. And I think you'll see as we get through this that there's a particularly favorable confluence of events, I guess you would say, or technologies between SoCs, multi-core, Linux, and virtualization that I think further strengthens the role of Linux as an embedded operating system and further accelerates its ability to, of course, which is what we've been doing for the last 10 years, replace RTOSes wherever you would really like to use Linux. And so what we'll do is we'll kind of build the case for that. And certainly we're open to questions and challenges. This is just engineering and technology. So if you got some questions or hey, that doesn't seem quite right, have at it, because all we're trying to do is solve problems here. So if we go on to the first slide, and Patrick's my intrepid slide changer here. First, let's just, why are we even talking about virtualization? Who needs this stuff? And of course, we're part of the computing environment, and certainly in mainstream IT, and even desktop for that matter to some extent, computing, this notion of virtualization has taken hold remarkably so. And one question you might ask is why? And if you take a look at servers, for example, it's very obvious that what sort of evolved over time was a coupling between applications, the operating system, and hardware, such that if you had a new application, hardware was cheap enough, thanks to Intel, that one generally just kind of threw a server at the next, mail application or the next, application that you're trying to deploy. And over time, what that amounted to was giant rooms full of individually configured servers. And it turns out to be inefficient and not to mention not very green. It costs a lot of money. And there's a lot of inefficiency in that. So you can see that, in fact, many servers were quite underutilized if you had this kind of strong coupling, one-to-one correspondence. So at any rate, people aren't dumb, and folks notice that there is this giant inefficiency with respect to IT computing. And the ability to multiplex a server by using hypervisors and so on to allow different operating systems, different versions of operating systems to coexist on a single piece of hardware, it would allow for enormous consolidation. And that's exactly what's happened. And one way to measure this, of course, is, what kind of business did this generate? And you can look at VMware and other companies, and it's tremendous. It's billions of dollars worth of installations of hypervisor kind of technology to enable all this. So kind of the market speaks in that there was a very large uniform problem that could be satisfied by some interesting technology and has led to some very successful businesses, all right? So now we go on to the next slide, and we, if story of my life, right, having done embedded systems for a long time, well, an interesting story. Very powerful technology on the IT side, but as usual, embedded systems are different, at least in, I would say, in the vast majority of cases. The first thing is, in a sense, what engineers do in building one of these systems, our friends at Cisco or anywhere else, is they're highly optimized and they're performance-oriented typically and not underutilized. In fact, probably trying to get too much out of the particular processor or set of processors that they're using. So this kind of notion of a reservoir of underutilized equipment that you could kind of reconfigure by virtualization, at least at the hypervisor level, in general doesn't exactly ring true. I think these are highly optimized, highly engineered systems. And given the general dimension of performance tuning and performance, how many packets per second can my router do, and that's a sales feature. Now, there's a general principle in software, we would say, is that no layer of software ever made the underlying processor go faster. In other words, yes, you might sort of envision some notions that virtualization might do for you, but like anything else, there's no free lunch and there's a cost associated. So for certain, there's at least a tug of war between some benefits of some form of virtualization and the underlying cost of it as a layer of software. And that's just an engineering decision to be made, but certainly there's no free lunch on these things. Another, I would say, indirect measure of, or maybe it's pretty direct, depending on your point of view, but there have been embedded hypervisor, hypervisor or microkernel technologies available for embedded processors for quite some time. And certainly, it depends on your point of view, but many, many years, you know, maybe 5 years or more, and very good technology and good companies, and shipping product, no question about it. But fundamentally, the amount of business, the number of installations and translated into money is actually quite small. So it says that this is not a uniform, huge problem that can sustain a large business. It's necessary technology, but for some applications, but it's not universal by any means. So it says it's, you know, typical with embedded systems. It's highly fragmented or very niche. So, and then one last kind of editorial comment to kind of cap all of this off, because we often see the coupling between multi-core and virtualization. Oh, a multi-core chip, you obviously need to have virtualization for that. And, you know, along those lines, you'll see things like, you've got, you know, in communications, for example, you've got control plane and data plane, and it's well understood that you need an RTOS for the data plane because of performance. You certainly are going to need some sort of a hypervisor on multi-core. You're going to have to run multiple OSs on these multi-core chips because of performance and so on. There's a lot of, you know, to my mind, kind of knee-jerk, notions about what multi-core virtualization, that kind of whole mix of things, implies. And we basically said, let's kind of slow down a little bit. Let's really take a look at what's going on, and let's see if we can find our way through this. And obviously, we have a point of view, but our point of view is to see if we could simplify an environment, obviously meet the requirements, but not necessarily just kind of assume the conventional wisdom on how all this stuff would be put together. And so that's what we'll show you for the rest of the presentation, that we think there is a very viable alternative and arguably simpler approach to handling this kind of nexus of virtualization and multi-core capability. Okay. So that's what the rest of the seminar is about, right? We gotta answer the question. So what is useful about virtualization for embedded systems? And with that, my friend Patrick McCarty will take over and kind of give you the top-level technological view of where we've come down on virtualization, for sure, but at what level and why we justify where we are. Patrick?
Thanks, Jim. So when we look at the virtualization use cases that are out there, as Jim talked about earlier, no piece of software ever made anything run faster. And you look at the paradigm between performance and isolation, and there's three major chunks that we look at here. You know, standard Linux, containers, BDS gels, SE Linux, those types of things, KVM, and then at the far end we have VMware and QEMU, where you have, you know, really high levels of isolation, but your performance drops dramatically. And while, you know, this is suitable for the IT world, we don't find it such as Linux for embedded. So if we go and we look at our diagram here of a Linux system for this conversation, you know, there's the electronics, hardware, device controller, logical, bridge, virtual, and user space functional layers. And as an example, we have this mapped out for the CPU. And you can go up and see what we're talking about exactly through all the different layers of software on the system. When we go and we look at what Linux and QEMU looks like, when you're going through a full QEMU emulation, you're basically repeating the entire hardware stack, all everything in the software and everything in the application. There's a lot of overhead there. So doing this level of emulation takes a lot out of the processor. Very cumbersome, and there are absolutely use cases, especially if hardware is unavailable. But for a general rule, not the most eloquent use of your resources in an embedded device. When we look at KVM and hypervisors, what you're actually doing is you're virtualizing the hardware, and you're still replicating that entire OS. So you still have your device controllers, your logical, your bridge, your virtual layer, your user space interfaces, and your functional layers. All replicating, which again, really taxes your CPU and your hardware and isn't a very optimized way to run your system. And here we get to Linux and containers. This is what we think is much more useful. Oh, I'll sit here and hold for a second. I see that the slides aren't quite advancing as fast as I think they are. All right. Linux and containers. So here we see we are virtualizing at the OS level, above the virtual level, and you can see that while you can create many containers and put many applications in there, you're not really creating a lot of overhead. It's very lightweight. And when you're looking at optimized system and embedded, where there isn't a lot of CPU and a lot of memory to go and consume, this is the most lightweight and optimized method, we think, for an embedded approach. Next, we'll look at a typical RTOS solution that we see from many vendors. Cthrip, what you have in the big box is they always tout the RTOS, the proprietary solution that's going to solve all your problems. You have your proprietary hypervisor over all the hardware, and then you have your small Linux box. I'm just pausing for a second because it seems like we're having a lag. Here, okay. Anyways, coming back, we have the large proprietary box for the RTOS, and then you have your hypervisor over all the hardware, and then you have this tiny little Linux box. And they really do trivialize Linux and what it is you're going to be doing there. And when you look at what's being done there, you're going through and you have to parallelize the paravirtualize the Linux to get it to work. You're going through and paravirtualizing the RTOSes. There's proprietary software everywhere. And again, we just come back to this thing, you know, the same question. This all looks so complex and convoluted. Why not just use Linux everywhere? And this is the solution that we've provided for people. So the MonaVista virtualization architecture, we have SMP, native real-time Linux apps, containers, and where we use the, where we implement things like VRF. We have our bare metal engine, and then we have KVM, which is a app plus guest OS. You know, again, we don't see a lot of use cases for using a kernel virtual machine and using KVM, but we do recognize that they're out there, so we do provide one for you. The major use cases we have for KVM containers or bare metal engine are as follows. Hardware, if you need hardware partitioning, and lower overall performance, and different kernels and different OSs, such as a legacy RTOS, KVM is probably the right solution for you. You want to use containers if you need soft resourcing or partitioning with maximum performance. Multiple secure application instances, such as walled gardens, or process jails. If you want throughput performance, such as data plane, or user mode drivers, or high performance of bare metal environment, what we have is our bare metal engine. So now we'll talk about virtualizing with containers. Containers provide a lightweight virtualization isolation process with resources without the complexities of full virtualization. It provides the illusion of controlling system resources, even though they may be shared. It partitions resources to balance the conflicting demand. And when we talk about Linux containers here, we're talking about the LXC program and project that's out in the community. We also use control groups and namespaces to enable this technology. control groups, better known as C groups, controls access to resources. It also resource controls and registers subsystems. Below you can see a group of the overall subsystems that are registered in C groups and that are supported. Things like CPU set, CPU, CPU accounting, memory, devices, freezer, and NetCLS. The other technology used in enabling containers is namespaces. Namespaces provide resource isolation. They clone resource namespaces. The resource ID is virtualized by turning it into table-specific groups. Namespaces support the following namespaces, such as UTF, IPC namespaces, PID namespaces, user namespaces, PROC, read-only mind mounts, and read-only bin mounts, sorry, and network namespaces. Uses for containers. Well, there's two major use cases that we find. An application workload isolation. In this example, you can see that we have three containers created here for a single system. App 1 and App 2 and App 3 are all sharing the same CPU. In App 1, you see that in App 2, they're targeted at 25% consumption on the CPU, where App 3 is allowed to consume 50%. The memory is split out in the same ratio. When you get down to the network, you can see that App 1 and App 2 are sharing the first network card, and App 3 has 100% utilization of that network card. This is done through the combination of C groups and namespaces. When we look at use cases for completely virtualized OS, we've actually been working with a customer to figure out a solution for set-top boxes, and this is one that we've been helping them implement. For example, pulling set-top boxes into a cloud and pulling it out of a home, you can simply virtualize the OS with containers and set up as many containers as you want with a set-top box application. Some pros and cons of containers. The advantages that we have are reduced overhead. Because you're being able to virtualize at the OS level and put in many more applications, you're not creating the overhead that KVM or hypervisors use, you can create a higher density application environment. It also reduces sprawl. Because you can update the underlying file system that can be shared by all applications, you only have to update one OS, and that reduces maintenance hassle and flexibility when trying to update. Some of the drawbacks are reduced flexibility. Because there is reduced isolation and because you can't have multiple OSs, there are some limitations to the container solution. If you need to do multiple OSs or different kernel versions, you'll need something like a hypervisor or KVM. Again, you don't get the same level of isolation here, but you still are able to protect GPL in many instances. And while this is a very suitable solution for most use cases, if you really need a hard isolation and process jail or GPL jail, you may consider using a different approach. So what about driving performance in telecom?
Well, that's a good question, Patrick. One of the things that we've, sort of been on a rampage for since we started the company is the improvement in Linux in terms of its embedded capabilities, obviously size and other things. And the most one that always comes to mind is real time, and sort of right adjacent to that is performance and typically in communication applications and throughput. And we wanted to take the opportunity, especially now with multi-core chips, to, in a sense, take out the last barriers, you might say, to the utilizing Linux in very high performance, kind of I/O intensive and hardware intensive applications, and sort of finally prove that, in fact, you know, we could do the kind of things that was typically reserved for an RTOS or even a sort of a more dedicated application approach to you know, performance. And what we, I think, is a good example implicit in all of this is something like, and it isn't necessarily restricted to this, but if you take a look at something like a Cavium Octeon, which is designed for high-performance packet handling, and does so through the combination of multi-core, up to 32 cores, for example, and very dedicated acceleration, packet handling, encryption, deep packet inspection hardware. So it's kind of a wonderful example of hardware, you know, fully dedicated to munching on packets. And the question is, what do you got to do to the software to utilize that? And is it you know, only the domain of either very dedicated, you know, simple kinds of executives or RTOSes on that kind of hardware to get the performance that the hardware will allow? And so what we wanted to do, in the end, you know, you look at it this way. The RTOS folks don't have any secret instructions on the Octeon or any other processor that we don't have or can't use in Linux. It's all software. So it's really a question of architecture. It's really a question of constraints or design, but there's no sort of theoretical reason why, you know, a multi-core chip like an Octeon running Linux using the same instructions couldn't kind of wrestle out the same kind of performance that you might, you know, sort of think would be obvious to do with an RTOS. So what we call this is expanding or exposing the inner RTOS that is lurking inside Linux, if only we could figure out how to sort of expose it or make it happen. So if you look at it, so if you look at how you might approach an Octeon, really the core of the programming is all about the underlying hardware. In other words, it's using the accelerators and the engines that are there on the SoC to do something to this stream of packets that are floating by. So it's really defined and the programming is largely dominated by this very intense and high-performance I/O programming. Slight problem, you might say, though, and that is that the typical Linux I/O, I mean, the formal Linux I/O programming model, open, close, read, and write, the formal I/O device driver interface, is wonderfully designed to support a multi-process environment in a sense, in a kind of an IT-centric peripherals, disks, Ethernet controllers, and so on. And multiplexing those across all the different processes and buffering things and you know, keeping track of everything. But through as we saw in the earlier pictures, through a relatively sophisticated but layered software system. So which is great for running a server, but it may not be so great for a dedicated SoC. In fact, it isn't. There's a bunch of constraints, and what we wanted to do is eliminate those. So how can we have our cake and eat it too? You know, how can we use Linux but not be subject to an I/O system that was designed to what we want to do? And you know, how do we get the most out of Linux in this situation? So what typically happens, and there's not necessarily anything wrong with this, it's just we think there's a better way, is that one of the first constraints you have in terms of using Linux is that it does proper user mode, system mode separation. And if you're wanting to program all this stuff in user mode, the typical Linux model, rightfully so, completely limits access to the underlying hardware, for instance, memory mapped I/O hardware at the user mode process level. So that's kind of a big non-starter because I got to get access to all that underlying SoC hardware, and it'd be very expensive to do so through typical system calls and the layering. So the next thought is, well, okay, I'll do all this programming in the kernel, which is quite commonly done. However, there are some drawbacks to doing that. Among other things, you're inside the kernel. A simple error in the program can do wonderfully bad things, in other words, bring down the whole system. It's a privileged area, and you really would rather not have as much all that software down there if you could avoid it. the internal kernel interfaces are unstable. In other words, the Linux development community doesn't particularly make any guarantees that the data structures and underlying, you know, the layout of how the kernel works will stay the same from rev to rev, and that's fine. They have to be able to do that, but it means that, you know, you're going to have some catch-up to do if you've actually jammed everything into the kernel. You can't write C++ or Java, for example, and that may be a consideration, but it's typically limited to C itself. And in fact, it's a very sophisticated programming environment, relatively. And if you're wanting to utilize as many, application programmers as possible, this is not exactly an application programmer environment, friendly environment. It's a quite a unique one. So, last but not least, depending on what you're doing inside the kernel, you may encumber your software or be subject to the rules of the GPL, which may or may not be fine with you. But, the typical programming, at least in some cases, might actually bind to internal data structures and so on, and that actually there are definite considerations about implications in the software for GPL. So really the cake and eat it too hypothesis here is, look, we'd like to be able to control and get extremely high performance out of our Linux system and do all this direct access to hardware and make an Octeon go really, really fast. But if we could avoid getting inside the kernel, that would really be cool. How do we do that? So that's what we're trying to set up. And we'll go on to the next slide here. So we've taken a look at how we do this, and we've aggregated a large number of sort of disparate Linux capabilities, including user mode drivers and many other facilities that have either been adjacent projects to Linux or actually are incorporated inside the Linux kernel. And we basically aggregated a set of these, made sure that they were optimized for the underlying hardware. In other words, because you are doing direct access to hardware for the acceleration and so on, there are some general principles involved here, but in many cases there are specific optimizations that are unique to an instance of hardware because that's the way it is. And so, although we do utilize general known technologies and capabilities within Linux, they are then mapped and optimized for the particular underlying hardware that we find. And so what Bare Metal Engine does in particular is it provides this high-performance direct access environment, but with not having to be inside the kernel. The development is done in user space using the typical tools that are supplied by MontaVista and others for Linux. On the other hand, we've measured and can provide what we like to call bare metal performance. In other words, this is particularly enabled on multi-core chips, where in fact, using many of the facilities that come out of the container technology, we dedicate a core or set of cores to this bare metal engine environment. And by this optimization that we've talked about in terms of how Linux deploys, how Linux vectors interrupt, what each Linux core under the influence or under the control of Linux, what each core has to do or not have to do, we basically optimize such that the core, a set of cores that are in the bare metal environment are essentially unencumbered by any unnecessary Linux overhead and, in fact, deliver essentially the entire bandwidth of the core to the application at hand. And with that, we think, it essentially gives, within a Linux user mode context, the illusion, effectively, of having a core or set of cores all to yourself, and including access to the underlying hardware. So the memory is mapped such that, however the particular architecture does it, that you can have full access to the I/O memory space and the correct interrupts are vectored to the cores and so on. So it's really, we think, have delivered on exposing the inner RTOS, having your cake and eat it too. And we do that through a combination, as Patrick had mentioned, of the C group capability within containers. That's where processor affinity occurs. So that's where we can dedicate, even within a Linux context, certain cores that are dedicated to this environment. So really what we're doing here is having a combination of potentially SMP, symmetric multiprocessing capability on some cores, if you want, and then arguably this AMP environment. In other words, these cores in Bare Metal Engine are completely dedicated to the sort of single application, if you will, and are not part of the scheduling pool for the rest of the rest of Linux. So that's, again, using some of the underlying container technology. Just as a little bit of an inventory for those of you who know about this stuff, there's been a technology called user mode drivers out there, which we use as part of this environment. We've mentioned processor affinity. The part of the configuration of this is controlling the interrupt vectoring such that only the interrupt that the core is interested in handling is vectored to that, and in fact not sort of sharing in the vectoring and handling of interrupts from the rest of the devices, because you have no need to do so. And by the way, just as a quick aside, although it's interrupt latencies and so on are typically measured and can be important, and especially these kind of applications, for example, in running some of the benchmarks that we've done, where you might see handling of millions of packets, doing whatever packet processing you want to do, the number of interrupts actually that occurred during that process is relatively small. It's a tiny fraction, certainly well under, is on the order of a couple hundred. The point being, it's actually, you can't get the performance that you need strictly by driving off interrupts. What you typically do is, as you're processing, say an interrupt does occur, you typically stay in that state and continue to drain packets from the hardware till you don't have any. And if you're doing a really good job and there's very, very high packet load, you'll get them all by polling. You won't have to actually sit on interrupts and getting them. It's far more efficient to actually sit there and get them by polling, because they're going to be there the next time you look. And so although interrupt performance is important, sort of as a general notion, actually in these kind of applications, it's not the limiting factor by any means. And there's a couple other tricks too, but watching how Linux likes to handle the clock, turning on tickless timers, for example, so that you're not wasting cycles. In this case, it may not even matter so much, because you've got the clock ticks headed off to other cores anyway. But nevertheless, it's part of the inventory of technology that, for instance, on a single core would make a difference, because you wouldn't be having to drive through the clock handler every tick. So it would give you more cycles to be doing something else. So we're not claiming, just so it's clear, because I know engineers tend to be rightfully so very cynical or very literal, this is a very intelligent and a very clever aggregation of many technologies in Linux and surrounding Linux, plus optimizations for the particular hardware instance, either x86 or, for instance, obviously we've done Cavium Octeon, to produce this bare metal environment. So what that means is, I think, for the first time, that to the extent to which this is useful for folks, one is being able to use Linux where, in fact, one thought before that you had to use some other RTOS. So it's another bridge to allowing an environment. We have, for instance, what we see inside large companies where, if possible, they'd like to use Linux in as many applications as possible. And here we say, I think pretty authoritatively, that it's perfectly possible to be using Linux in data plane applications and have the performance that you would expect, simply because we've been able to optimize and configure and deliver essentially the full hardware, full hardware bandwidth to Linux applications by utilization of this bare metal environment. There's also the notion that, especially on a multi-core processor, that in fact you could combine what is typically often on two different processors, and that is the control plane applications, where something like Monte Vista carrier grade Linux is often used. But on that same multi-core processor, having a set of cores dedicated to the data plane actions, using the bare metal environment invoked inside the carrier grade Linux instance. So it's certainly possible to, what I've sort of coined the term a chassis on a chip. What used to be done on a chassis full of
both processor control plane boards and dedicated data plane boards with a suitable multi-core chip, actually doing it all on one, and having a Linux that can actually both handle the more traditional kind of Linux-Unix environment in the control plane, as well as through bare metal engine, being able to have complete hardware utilization for the underlying data plane application. So we can, if you take a look at as kind of a summary on all of this, I think for better or worse, as we said earlier on, embedded is different. Typically engineered systems, highly optimized, performance-oriented, and that we have to adapt the technology that we might inherit from our IT friends to make it more suitable for the real use cases we find in embedded systems. And what we'd like to present is an environment then where it's lower in complexity, that you don't have multiple layers of software. In fact, you have something that you know pretty darn well, which is Linux. And what we've done is basically extend its capabilities, especially downward towards the data plane or this high-performance environment, but also upwards in the sense of what we do with containers, and providing an OS, OS virtualization to present a pretty comprehensive environment with a single set of tools you know from Linux, single instance of Linux, basically simplify life for engineers and developers as opposed to complicated. And what we found over the last probably, 9 months or so that we've been briefing customers is that, and not in every case, nothing fits everything, but certainly in the vast majority of cases, I think there's been a pleasant surprise in the insight we've had here and the environment that we provide, and maybe a little relief in that perhaps the world isn't relentlessly getting more complex, but here's a situation where although we give complex capabilities, we do so in a relatively straightforward and, relatively speaking, simpler environment, and that is Linux. So with that, I think we're at the end of the formal presentation, and hopefully we've been clear enough that this will generate some interesting questions, and maybe someone likes to argue with us a little bit, and that would be fine, too.
Yeah, I'd also add that we have a demo. We'll be having a demo of the bare metal engine in the data plane at Mobile World Congress in the Cavium booth coming this February. So if you're out there, swing on by the booth and check it out.
Okay. Well, this is Chris, the moderator. I want to thank Jim and Patrick for going through those slides, and I also want to thank Jim for throwing down the gauntlet to go ahead and argue with you with an audience like the one I see here. I'm sure you're going to get some people commenting back, and already we have a number of questions in the queue, so I'm going to send the first question in. Now, I don't know which of you two gentlemen want to respond, so I'll just send it to you, and either one of you or both of you can go ahead and pipe up. So here's the first question. Are you really saying Linux can replace an RTOS and do real-time?
Yeah, yes, this is Jim. And especially if the typical situation with this question, and it's a great question, the typical setup is I'm on some panel and there's a guy from Green Hills on the other side just absolutely screaming that this is impossible. And, why is that the case? And getting into, and rightfully so, in a sense, getting into, what is real time and definitions, and Linux is a billion lines of code and everything else. And so I, a couple of times what I do is scream back, and then I think, well, this is kind of lame. We can do better than that. I'll be more civil, all right? So, the way I answer this now is, hopefully you won't see it as a weasel answer. I think it's actually a good one, which is we have customers who come to us who will tell us what their requirements are, and they can describe them in many, many ways. We'll accept whatever, description the customer might have of their requirements, and we'll get, we'll ask them quantitative questions. And many of those customers will choose to say that those are real-time requirements, but rather than getting into giant battles about what the definition of real time is, what we do is we ask our customers to say, tell us what you need in terms of latency, tell us what you need in terms of jitter, tell us what you need in terms of throughput, just kind of quantify the capability that you need, and then we'll tell you that whether we can meet it or not. And you can choose to call that whatever you want. I'm just calling it meeting your requirements, okay? So, and the reason I say it that way is because that's what customers do. In other words, they may or may not characterize that requirement as, quote, academic real time. They just tell us, hey, look, we need the service interrupts under so many milliseconds or so many microseconds, or we need to handle so many packets per second, and we need kind of a guarantee that the jitter in interrupt handling is less than this number. So if you take it, if you sort of get it by the meeting requirements, then we haven't had a customer yet that's given us requirements in that way that we haven't been able to meet. Now, having said that, the short answer is yes. There's no question we can meet what I think is academically acceptable definitions of real time, and there's no question that Linux has been proven in over years now to do so. And yes, we are saying that that's the case. And now one last comment on that, which is the real problem we were trying to solve is a customer really would like to use Linux, but ran into some technical limitation, say in real time or in size or whatever else, that they couldn't do it. And our job has always been to remove those technical limits. And the reason I say that is because there might be an application, say anti-lock braking or some other such system that is so dedicated and is so, the kind of hardware that they want to supply to make the anti-lock braking system is so small and so dedicated that there's no advantage to having Linux on that system. Why would you want it? And so there's plenty of applications that do fine with an RTOS or even a just dedicated software. But the problem we were trying to solve is the customer perceived a real advantage to using Linux, but was running into some technical limitations. And that's our whole point, was to solve those limitations. So the situation was the application would greatly benefit from having Linux, but had some limits that the sort of ordinary Linux couldn't meet. And in that sense, I think we've done a great job of expanding the capabilities of Linux such that a very wide range of applications, typically considered real-time, typically using an RTOS, can benefit from Linux.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Jim. This next question is a clarification of the definition of what is your bare metal engine. So can you define it, please, either of you two gentlemen?
Yeah, I'll do it again. It's basically a configuration. It's a configuration of Linux features or a configuration of Linux capabilities on a particular piece of hardware to deliver the maximum number of cycles that a core can provide. So there's a lot of parameters in Linux. A lot of ways interrupts are vectored, the way memory is mapped, TLBs are mapped, and so on. There's a lot of configuration in Linux itself, software configuration, and there's a lot of configuration of the underlying hardware that if you do all of that stuff right and don't get one of them wrong, then you can deliver within a Linux context very, very high performance equivalent to being on the core itself. And that configuration, which can be configurable. In other words, there's options on that. That capability is what we call bare metal engine.
So I have a question, Jim. Do you list on your website or in any of your company material, pick a processor or pick a flavor of a processor, and then this is the Monte Vista bare metal engine for this processor, or does someone have to come to you with a processor and or system requirement and say, this is what I've got, and then you folks customize a set of requirements for your bare metal engine for that particular user?
Both. So we do have a number of use cases that we are making available as part of our carrier grade product. And obviously they're very telco centric. This is the first product that we're releasing this on. And there'll be obviously, like we walked through the example today, there'll be a use case for data plane and packet processing, packet forwarding. Those will be the first use cases that we'll be providing, and there will be others that come along. And so those will be somewhat configured on the boards that we select. However, we know that with this type of technology, there's going to be many use cases out there that we haven't foreseen, and customers can come to us and have us work with them on their processor, on their chip, on their specific customized board and SoC, and we are happy to work with them to customize any bare metal engine environment for them.
How does a bare metal engine environment differ from, say, a board support package, since you mentioned boards as opposed to just CPU chips?
Ah, well, by the way, as the inventor of the term BSP, I am pleased to comment. little known fact, there's a royalty involved in using that, which I've never collected. But well, BSP is actually it's a good question. You know, BSP in general, you know, is the underlying is the if you view an OS as being hardware independent, then a BSP is in some form or another the collection of hardware dependent software that allows that OS to run on the hardware. In the old RTOS days, you know, it was quite definable. In fact, with Vertex, you know, Vertex was a binary image, so BSP was, you know, very much arm's length in a sense. I mean, there's defined interfaces. Linux, of course, as it is being a source code kind of defined OS, wonderfully distributes the BSP throughout the Linux kernel. I mean, it's not total, but it's a little bit more. It's not as arm's length, and certainly isn't where you have Linux as a binary. It's you know, part of the configuration of Linux, and in that sense, bare metal engine is kind of a part of it is a very specific hardware configuration. It's some software for a very specific setup and configuration of the underlying hardware. So in effect, it's a tailored BSP for a particular set of hardware components. Say on Octeon again, you know, it'd be all the setup for the memory and the interface, such as it is to the different acceleration, like the packet inspection and other engines on an Octeon. And so that hardware-specific set of software, which would then change as you move from chip to chip, you know, that's kind of like there would be a very specific instance of a subset of the hardware configured. So it's would be part of a BSP in a general sense, but a very configurable part of it because you're really trying to optimize things.
Okay, thank you. Now we have a number of questions in the queue here since you have been speaking of Cavium processors for data plane applications in telco. See if I can encapsulate a few of these, no pun intended, to save us some time. First of all, the first question from the high level down, is this technology only available on Cavium chips? Kind of a yes or no quickly.
No, it's a general capability. Actually, the first two instances happen to be on x86 and Cavium. For some reason, Cavium shows up on our product line. I'm not quite sure why. I guess maybe because they're a very popular chip. And I also haven't owned the company. But actually, it's because Cavium has done extraordinarily well in this particular application and is the number one supplier as far as we know. So that's why. But it's, you know, the upper layers are, for instance, containers are completely hardware independent. And then, as we mentioned, certain aspects of bare metal engine are rightfully completely hardware dependent.
Okay, very good. So these next two questions are related. I'm going to read them, and you can decide how to combine them yourself. Are you saying that it's a decision between using the Cavium exec or your bare metal engine, and is a Linux bare metal engine for the Cavium Octeon compatible with the Cavium Octeon Simple Executive, or can the SE functions run inside the bare metal engine? So those are very similar questions.
Right, but so on the first part, when you're asking if there's a decision to be used between exec or bare metal engine, there isn't. On the slide, we were saying what we were trying to portray is where you could use or has in the past used Simple Executive, you can now use bare metal engine and get the same performance and keep it all on Linux. Since you're typically running Linux on those chips anyways, why not keep a single environment and program in that environment?
Right. Just to make a clarification, two things. One is Simple Exec runs within Linux and would run within Bare Metal Executive. So the point there is that, and this is system design, I don't think there's an automatic answer, but it could very well be that, in fact, having Simple Exec on some cores and having Monte Vista Carrier Grade on others is the right way to go, and especially, let's say, you've already done it. There's no necessary reason to change. On the other hand, running simple exec within Bare Metal Engine does one thing, and that is it moves and unifies the programming development environment from two separate ones, i.e. simple exec by itself on some cores, and then Linux and its programming environment to one. Although it's still simple exec based, it's just now you're within Linux and you have the Linux debuggers, you have the Linux, you know, the way the system loads, the cross development tools, all that stuff is now, you know, based on one environment. And that may be a pretty compelling reason. It's just simplification. So there's not a right answer there. There's really kind of, if you've already got stuff developed and it seems to work, that's fine. If you're starting from scratch, it may be the right approach is simple exec within Bare Metal Engine and having one development environment rather than two.
Okay, very good. Thank you both. This next question is a good one. You mentioned other RTOS companies in the marketplace a couple of times, and you mentioned one by name. This is a related question, and I think it's a viable one. It says, can Linux be secured? One of the reasons why users use proprietary vendor RTOS is that due to the security requirements, such as in the defense market or medical, et cetera. So can Linux be secured? Get the context.
Yeah, that's a good question, too. And I think, you know, it's one of these things that the demonstrable answer is yes, the provable answer is yes, and that is for a very specific case. Maybe a slight nuance on the question is can Linux be certified? And the answer is objectively yes, because it already has been, certainly through our customers in medical instrumentation, for example. And ironically, I had to get in early today to discuss with a European customer how we're going to go through FDA certification for them and a patient monitoring device, and which we've already done for other customers. So the answer is the market has and customers have in many, many instances already determined that they're going to use Linux, have used it, and have deployed it and done so in certified systems. And they just work with the certifying agencies to do so. So, it's not actually a question in the sense of will it ever. The answer is it already has been. And by the way, if you want to get in another shouting match, bring up bring up Linux with folks who are heavily invested in proprietary operating systems with respect to this whole security question, and you'll have another wonderful basis for a shouting match. But the way I look at this stuff, it really doesn't matter in a way what I think, or it doesn't matter what a proprietary RTOS vendor thinks. It matters what customers think and do, and what they've already thought and done is that it's an absolutely viable and usable technology, and they decide when they take it through certification and wherever else they use it. And I haven't seen any particular barriers to folks that have determined that Linux would work for them, then they figure out how to do the steps that they then, have requirements for. So, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, we are right at the top of the hour, but there's one last question here that I'm going to throw to Patrick, but ask Patrick that you answer this in 30 seconds or less, because we don't want to be disrespectful to our audience who have hung with us here. What benchmarks does MontaVista have to back this information up, and I think in terms of the performance numbers that you're quoting? So quickly, please.
So we do have we have reams of data, but we're unveiling all that at Mobile World Congress at our demo. So come by, you can see the live demo and see it in person. We'll have an Ixia tester set up, and we'll be cranking traffic on our Bare Metal Engine to show its capabilities.
What a great kicker and wrap-up. So thank you both very much. Jim Reddy, Patrick McCarty, I appreciate your time today. That brings us right up to the top of the hour, and as I mentioned at the beginning, we may not have gotten to all of your questions today. In fact, there are a handful of them still in the queue, so somebody may get back to you after the eCast to get answers to your questions. I want to thank our speakers from MontaVista Software today and, of course, their company who sponsored today's eCast and made it a reality. The eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours. Oftentimes, that's done by close of business today. I want to thank you all for attending. We appreciate your time and interest. We're adjourned. Goodbye.
Yeah. Also, I just want to say, feel free to post any more questions to meld.org, and we'd be happy to answer them there.
That's meld.org, meld.org.
Correct.
Thank you all. Take care.